Welcome back, everyone. We have a lot to jump into in this video. First of all, the market across the board, from the Dow Jones to the NASDAQ, is in the red, and they say that it's based off of economic concerns. Worries mount about economic growth, right? That is the concern, and I think it's a valid one. We have Jamie Dimon here, the CEO of JP Morgan, telling people to brace themselves for economic hurricane caused by the Fed and the Ukraine war. So we have the CEO of the largest bank in the world telling people to brace themselves. That's not really what you want to hear. And I think that him saying this may have actually caused the markets to swing into the red. I think this has a lot of impact. But regardless, today, even despite all this gloomy news and the markets moving down, Salesforce, one of the 9 holdings in the story fund, is up 10%. And this move is off the backs of their recent earnings report. Obviously, investors found something or a couple things that they really liked in this earnings report. So I went ahead and I reviewed it. We're going to dive into it together. We're going to look over the financials. We're going to look over all the important things to look at with a company like this, the growth of it, the margins, the dilution, right? The sustainable moat, as well as the valuation. I've ran multiple models of cash flow analysis and how to value this company. So we're going to be diving into that as well. So we have a lot of fun news to get to in this episode. Now, before we jump into Salesforce specifically, I want to give an update on the Story Fund. If you're one of the new subscribers to the channel, if you're one of the new members here, we've gained a lot of subscribers over the past couple of months. This is a real portfolio. And the reason that I show this every week and keep updating it every week is to show transparently real investing. And I think that that's actually important. If you get just snippets of what people are doing and you see their portfolio updates once every 6 months, you don't really see the pain that happens between transitions, like what's going on right now. The past 6 months has been very difficult for growth companies. So what I decided to do was to transparently and weekly track my portfolio and give everyone else an insight into what's going on, good or bad. And we can see the sell-offs in it, we can see the market gains and everything happen. But this is a real portfolio, it's my money invested in it, I'm trying to make as much money as possible. The goal of the portfolio, the game that I'm playing here, is to try to outperform the S&P 500 by the end of 2025. And I track that as well in a benchmark. So I benchmark this performance against the S&P 500. We can look at that right here. This is the chart. And my portfolio, the Story Fund, is the blue line. The S&P 500 is the red line. So we can see that throughout the duration of it, I was keeping up with it. I was even outperforming to some extent at some time periods. But since November, when the sell-off really happened, the big transition to the consumer staples and the big rotation out of tech did hurt my portfolio. And then there's been some other things as well. But there's other videos where I go into this in more detail. But as of right now, this is what the performance looks like. The Story Fund actually had a good week. We actually gained on the S&P 500 last week. And I think this is illustrative of probably what I think is more to come in the future, meaning that if we have bullish sentiment, if the markets do end up moving up at all, I think these type of companies will move up at a much quicker pace than the big defensive consumer staples. So the market right now is in risk-off mode. Everyone's wanting to be defensive. When the market becomes risk-on again, which I think will happen at some point, within the next 3 years, I think the market will want to take on some risk at some point. When that happens, I think that these companies will do better. And you saw that last week. My portfolio went from being down 32% to being down 23.5%. So it moved up a pretty significant amount, and the S&P 500 went from 0.8% to 4.3%. So we're gaining on it, but that's only when the market has some type of bullish sentiment and you want to take on some risk. So as of right now, we're still below the S&P 500, but we're not completely out of the range of catching back up. And you can see again how quickly things can change in just 1 week's time. This portfolio is up 9% in just the past 5 days. The S&P 500 is up 4.5%. So we gained a lot of ground, $7,900 in 1 week. A lot of that is due to Amazon, my largest position, moving up 14%. That's a 4,500 gain from Amazon alone. Then Google moved up quite a bit. We have Alibaba moving up over the past 5 days. We have Salesforce just today moving up 10%. So let's go ahead and jump into Salesforce specifically. Now, Salesforce is one of the companies that I've referred to as mini Microsoft. And I say that because it reminds me a lot of Microsoft. They're kind of a business-to-business company. They sell software as a service, and they are entrenched in companies that use their products. They have a sticky service, meaning that when a company signs up for their product and they start to implement it, they start to get used to it, they start to build upon it and use apps and integrations, it becomes entrenched in the company, where to unroot that and move to a different service is cumbersome and expensive. So it takes a lot of effort to move out of Salesforce to a competing service. And most companies, once they sign up for Salesforce, they stick with them. That's called switching costs. The switching cost from Salesforce to a competing service is very high. So that leads to high customer retention. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Salesforce, I want to show this quick video that explains it from a marketing standpoint. So this is marketing material created by Salesforce that they use to sell to different companies. So let me put on my headphones here. We'll watch this together.
Welcome to the Trusted Enterprise. This is the digital world, where we no longer have to be in a building to start building. Unless, of course, we want to be. Building better customer relationships, employee experiences, workflows, partnerships, apps, and ROI. So let's build on that with Salesforce Customer 360 and Slack on one integrated platform.
If you don't remember, Salesforce did acquire Slack. They used dilution and some debt and some cash to do it. In my opinion, I think it was a great acquisition. So a lot of investors were very cautious about it because Slack was an expensive acquisition to have. But Slack is like the go-to business-to-business chat application. It's competing with Microsoft Teams, but I kind of compare Slack to businesses like Discord is to online communities. It really is a really good acquisition for Salesforce, in my opinion.
And full-on digital transformation energy. So those headquarters of yours are now wherever the work happens. This is your digital HQ, the place for every employee to better connect with each other and customers. This is where all your teams unite with a single shared view of your customers, delivering incredible customer experiences incredibly efficiently. Because it's all asynchronous, meaning work stays fluid. So that meeting everybody was too busy to attend is still attended by everybody on their time through a shared channel, accessing every important document, presentation, and recorded message left for each other with live captions baked in, making it accessible to anyone. This is where all your customer data is gathered to generate pipeline reports for marketing so they know when to quickly spin up.
They also own Tableau. So that was another acquisition they did. It's an application that shows you charts and graphs and visuals. And I think another one that turned out to be really good for Salesforce. So this is a company that, like Microsoft, they keep picking up different acquisitions that are strategic and they actually have synergy. They're not just acquisitions to buy random companies and to increase their revenue, but they actually end up building them into their core service.
Up a genius new campaign boosting idea with their agency partner, securely through Slack Connect. And where IT integrates apps to improve data accuracy and productivity for everyone. This is where customer engagement takes off. It's where sales sets up a digital deal room with commerce to strategize around capitalizing on the campaign boosting momentum. Inviting legal, operations, support, Carl from finance, and more, creating workflows to streamline it all. Now meeting notes are automatically added, new contacts are automatically created, and reps are instantly notified of account updates wherever they are. This is where leads become customers. Customers who can count on the best support around. Because this is where service portals with knowledge articles and chatbots are at the ready to solve issues. And when something needs to be escalated, agents can swarm, identifying the right team members based on skills to take immediate action. And every team is united, so marketing emails and sales calls are temporarily paused. Until the case is resolved, because nobody wants to be marketed or sold to when they're having an issue. This is where trailblazers listen to customers and create platforms for change. This is where customers become customers for life. Then swap out sales, marketing, and service with lenders, brokers, and investors, helping entrepreneurs open their next location, or healthcare, or retail, or manufacturing, or entertainment. Because it's built for every industry imaginable. This is where every employee in every department, working from anywhere, is aligned with a single shared 360-degree view of every single customer. Your customers are everywhere, and your new digital HQ is how you connect with them to succeed from anywhere. This is Salesforce Customer 360 and Slack on one integrated platform. This is where work flows and customer success grows.
Okay. That's a little, again, that's marketing material from Salesforce. So they're trying to sell that to other businesses. But I think it does give you an idea of what the company has to offer. And I think that also gives you an idea of why when a company starts to use Salesforce, it becomes very difficult to move off of it. The switching costs are very high. So now that we're a little bit more familiar with the services that Salesforce offer, the value that it brings to other businesses, let's go ahead and talk about the fundamentals of the company. What's going on with the balance sheet, the financials, all of that good stuff, as well as the valuation. First of all, this was one of the companies that, like we saw right here in November, that time period, that magical November time period, when all these companies hit a high, started to trade downwards, and it's down 43%. So Salesforce is one of the companies, the cloud leaders, the big tech companies that got sold off with the rest of them. It wasn't sold off as much as some speculative ones, but it was sold off more than any non-tech company, right? Now, if we look at the fundamentals of the company, we have the most recent earnings report data included in this. So this is Qualtrum Insights. This is an application you gain access to if you're a member of the Patreon. And this is the beta version of the new one. So we are plugging in some stuff and doing some things here. It's kind of a work in progress, but this is going to be the new version of it. If we look at Salesforce overall, the company on a PE basis looks kind of expensive, but most people aren't valuing it that way. If we look at the most recent financials, we get a clear view here. This again includes last quarter. So last quarter right here, they revenued $7.41 billion. 7.41. That is a revenue gain year over year of 24%. And it beat their analyst estimates. So they outperformed on a revenue basis. They're up 24% year over year, which is very strong revenue growth for a company the size of Salesforce. And I anticipate that they'll continue to have solid revenue growth for a very long period of time. Now, the other thing that I just want to point out real quickly here is looking at the revenue chart, do you see how consistent it is? Almost like this perfect growing gradual slope quarter over quarter. I've looked at a lot of revenue charts, and there's not many of them that look like this. Most companies have very inconsistent revenue. Some quarters are making more than others because they're in cyclical markets. Well, this is the benefit of a SaaS company. Salesforce is a cloud SaaS company that has high retention rates, long contracts, continual billing. They have continual price control, and they can increase their prices over time. And that has the effect of having this really nice flowing revenue growth over time. Now, the revenue growth for a company like Salesforce is incredibly important because a company is priced to have a very long-term secular growth path, meaning the company is being priced right now by investors, assuming it's going to grow at a very decent mid-double-digit pace for the next 10 years. If the company suddenly showed that it stopped growing, like the revenue just started to flatten or completely decline, you'd have a bit of a Netflix situation there. We saw how Netflix investors reacted when the company stopped growing. That is the same risk for Salesforce. If it stops growing, the stock price will crumble. But I think, again, with Salesforce, the assumption is it's going to keep growing. And I think there's very good reason to believe that. Now, the revenue is important, but we also want to look at the other economics of the company, not just how much money they're taking in, but how much they're keeping. The EBITDA is a proxy for the earnings of the company, and it tries to smooth this out over time. Last quarter, they had $991 million of EBITDA, which is really decent. This was, again, above expectations. Then their free cash flow, which is possibly the best metric to look at for a company over time. This is a record high from Salesforce, $3.497 billion in free cash flow. Now, one important thing you want to look at, especially with tech companies, when you're looking at the free cash flow of the company, is you want to put this in the context of share dilution. Because a lot of tech companies in particular, they pay their employees by stock-based compensation. And the way that you get stock-based compensation is by issuing more shares. So you dilute the shareholders, you issue more shares, you use that money as cash flows to pay the employees. And that does show up on the free cash flow line item here. Now, the amount of stock-based compensation that Salesforce did last quarter was $776 million. What I did was I went into their earnings report right here where they mentioned their stock-based compensation expense, and then I just added up each of these items. They had the cost of revenues of $112 million. They had research and development of $279 million. They had marketing and sales of $291 million. And they had general and administrative of $94 million. So Salesforce pays a lot for this marketing and sales and research and development in terms of diluting the shareholder. So basically, all we need to do is look at the free cash flow. And if you want to factor in share dilution, you can minus out the $776 million. And that's what you're left with after dilution's taken effect. And even though Salesforce is diluting the shareholder, and you can clearly see that illustrated even in Qualtrum here, this is the amount of shares outstanding over time since the beginning of the company on a quarterly basis, we can see that they are diluting the shareholder, and this is something that I hate to see. I really exclude a lot of companies. I don't buy a lot of companies because they love to just pump out more shares, pay their employees and their executives very big pay packages, right? The executives make a fortune while me, the shareholder, is just being diluted. And a lot of times they're not doing accretive things with that dilution. They're not taking the money and doing something to make me more money. So Salesforce and their dilution is something that I don't like. But having said that, this is one of the exceptions I make because Salesforce is generating cash flows at a much quicker rate than their dilution. So if you were to pace out the dilution and then you're to pace out the free cash flows, they're still growing their free cash flows on a diluted basis much quicker than the average company. So overall, putting this in context, it is true that Salesforce is diluting shareholders. They did around 7% last year, but they are growing their free cash flow at a much more rapid pace. And over time, I think this rate of dilution will go down like most mature tech companies do. With Adobe, it went down and now they're doing share buybacks. With Microsoft and Google and all the big tech companies that used to dilute, now they're not doing this anymore. So I think that over time, this chart will go up with dilution, then it will level out. Then when they become so free cash flow positive, they'll start to do share buybacks. That's where I think this will end up over time. Now, moving on to another important metric to look at with a company like Salesforce, is the amount that they're spending on different expenses. Here we have added in a graph that shows the CapEx, that's capital expenditures, that's like trucks and warehouses and different physical goods that they have to store and build. So that is the blue chart here, or the blue line. Then we have the sales and marketing, which is the big orange part here. And you notice that sales and marketing take up the huge majority of Salesforce's expenses for the company. So we have the sales and marketing here in orange, then the general and administrative expense here in red, which is not a huge amount. It's still kind of high, but it's nowhere close to the sales and marketing. Then we have the growing research and development. So if we look at this overall, we can look at the sales and marketing growth. I can filter this out and we can see that Salesforce, as they grow their revenues, they grow their sales and marketing spend over time. And this eats in to their EBITDA and their profitability. So Salesforce is saying, instead of becoming really profitable right now by pulling back on sales and marketing, we're going to spend more and more on sales and marketing. We're going to eat into our profitability, but we're going to have that top line growth, that revenue growth. And as long as they continue to have that revenue growth as a consequence of doing the sales and marketing, I still think it's a positive thing. But this is an important thing to keep in mind because if we look at this, last quarter, they spent $3.37 billion on sales and marketing. $3.37 billion. And again, their total revenues last quarter were $7.41 billion. So total revenues, 7.4, total sales and marketing, 3.4, meaning that they spent roughly half of their revenue on sales and marketing. 50% gone to sales and marketing. That is a very high ratio of revenue to sales and marketing. It's not the worst. There's some companies that they spend almost 100% of their revenues on sales and marketing. So there's companies that are worse than Salesforce at this, but they are sacrificing half of their revenues to sales and marketing alone. So looking at these expenses overall, the idea behind the company, the way that this can scale and grow their margins, is over time, the sales and marketing should make up a lesser and lesser percentage of their overall revenue. Because if you look at very mature companies in this industry, they have to spend less and less percentage of revenue on sales and marketing. If we look at an example of this, we can look at Microsoft, right? Microsoft is like a big, huge, mature version of Salesforce. And if we look at their sales and marketing, we can filter this out. Last quarter, Microsoft spent $5.6 billion. So 5.6. And Microsoft's total revenue last quarter was $49 billion. So Microsoft didn't spend 50% of revenue on sales and marketing. They spent around 11%. And I think that over time, the same thing will happen for Salesforce. They'll go from spending 70% of their revenues on sales and marketing to 60 to 50 where they are now, to 40 to 30, 20, and so on. And as they get that as a smaller portion of overall revenue, their earnings and profitability go up. So overall, in summary, on a historical basis, there's a lot of things I do like about Salesforce. I like the product, the moat, the switching costs, the secular growth trend. I think it's going to be a long-term growing company. The revenue growth is very strong. The EBITDA growth is strong. The free cash flow is the highlight of the company. It's been growing its free cash flow on a very consistent and rapid basis. The balance sheet is very strong. There's no problems with the balance sheet. The part that we don't like about the company is it has very high expenses. They rely heavily on their sales and marketing team that they take up roughly half of what they earn in revenue. So very expensive to run the company. It's not lean right now. It's not optimized. And they pay for those expenses by diluting the shareholder. They've been doing 7% plus dilution year over year. And that's the other part that we don't like. But overall, there's some parts that we do like about the company, some parts that I don't like about the company. Now let's go ahead and talk about valuation. What I've done is I've ran through a lot of different models on how to model out the future cash flows of Salesforce and ultimately what I'm deciding to pay for those cash flows. So this isn't a perfect science. This is just based on some assumptions, but I think it puts on paper some of the future I see in Salesforce. This is a cash flow analysis on the company. Let me zoom in here so you can see it. Now, we have Salesforce. We have a 10-year cash flow analysis here. So this projects out until 2031. And then I make some assumptions based on historical information, as well as characteristics about the company, the mode of it, the secular trends. One of those assumptions is I think the revenue will grow on an annualized basis around 16%. So some years, like next year, it will grow faster, 20%. Then it will kind of slow down. But overall, if you were to annualize it over the next 10 years, I think they can grow at 16%. The company has a long runway of growth. If GDP in the US and every place they do business continues to grow, they can sustain this level of growth for a long period of time. So I don't think this revenue expectation is unrealistic. Hopefully, I think it will be quite accurate. That's the goal here. Now, the EBITDA margin here is you take the revenue and you see the percentage of EBITDA they gain from that revenue. So historically, last year, it was 25%. And I'm assuming 35%. Why am I assuming a higher EBITDA margin? Because like I said, I think over the next 5 to 10 years, Salesforce will gradually become a higher margin business. Their margins will improve as their revenue grows and outpaces the growth of their sales and marketing and outpaces the growth of their dilution. And as that happens, their EBITDA margins should improve over time. To give different comparable companies, Microsoft has an EBITDA margin of like 49%, way higher than what this assumption even is. Google's is way higher as well. Facebook is way higher. Even Apple's is at 40%, and they're a hardware company. So I don't see it as unrealistic to assume that a software company that has a scaling product can grow their EBITDA margins to a large extent over the next 10 years. And I think that they'll do that on a very consistent basis. So last year, it was 25%. At the end of 10 years, I think it will be above 40%. Annualized, I think it will be around 35%. Now, when I plug these numbers in, what this does is it projects out, based on my assumptions, the growth rate of these things over the next 10 years. So I can see what my revenue is going to be for Salesforce at the end of 2031, right there. It's $93 billion. And then I can see what the EBITDA will be at the end of 2031 based on that EBITDA margin. So that will be $32.8 billion. Now, because EBITDA stands for the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, we have to add that stuff back. Otherwise, our model wouldn't be correct. So we have the CapEx margin here. This is the percentage of revenue spent on CapEx, which includes that depreciation, amortization, and capital expenditures. But then we also have to add back in the taxes, which I'm using a flat effective tax rate of 14%. So I calculate that in as well. That's not right here as a variable though. And then at the end of this, what we should have is we have the EBITDA projections here. We have our capital expenditures here and how much we're spending on that. We have our effective tax rate that's right here. And then at the end, we have a number that is the accumulative calculation of this. So we have our EBITDA subtracting out our capital expenditures, subtracting out our tax rate, and then we have the number left over, which is our free cash flow line. So right here, we have the cash flow. That is the free cash flow of the company. And in 2031, 10 years from now, I'm projecting $27,279,000,000 in free cash flow. That's what this projects that the company will produce in free cash flows at the end of a 10-year basis. And then what you have to decide is if we've modeled out that the company is going to create that much cash flow, now we got to decide how much we're willing to pay for those cash flows. What do we think the market will be willing to pay for the cash flows, assuming these assumptions are correct? And what I did was I looked at the current price to free cash flow of Salesforce, and it's very high. It's around 40, and they're not going to keep it that high. So as they grow and mature and the company stops growing quite as quick at the end of 10 years, the price to free cash flow will contract over time. I really believe that. I think it will be something that you want to price in. So what I did was I looked again at the industry of matured companies, and I tried to undershoot this, meaning that I tried to be very conservative with these assumptions. And if I attach a price to free cash flow of 15, this is what this model spits out. What I did was I built a stock purchase distribution chart here. This shows you the current price of the company. Right now it's selling for $175 a share. And based on these conservative assumptions, I should be earning an 8.87% return if I bought it today. Now, if the price goes down 5% and I can buy it at $167, then my return goes up. As the price goes down and the assumptions stay the same, the future expected return goes up. If it goes down 10% to $158, if you could buy it for this price based on these assumptions, it should be a 10% annualized return. Then if you could get it for $150, the return should be 10.65%. And likewise, if the price goes up 5%, if we see it at 184, your returns go down, and 10%, your returns go down to 7.8. If it goes up to $202 a share based on these assumptions, the return would be 7.36% annualized. But as of right now, based on the current price and these assumptions, I should be getting an 8.87% return on what I believe, again, are intentionally somewhat conservative assumptions. But I'm trying to tilt this model more conservative. For example, if I want to be less conservative with my assumptions, I could plug in something like a 20 price to free cash flow exit. So if we assume investors are going to pay a 20 price to free cash flow, that changes the assumptions quite a bit. They go from 8% return based on today's price to 12% annualized. And that's a very good return for a company like this. And if you think that these are even aggressive assumptions, a 20 price to free cash flow, Microsoft right now trades at a 34. So Microsoft is at a 34 currently, even being as big and slow growing as it currently is. Salesforce is growing much faster. So when I say that 15 is a conservative assumption, I'm basing that on a lot of other companies. Now, just a disclaimer regarding this discounted cash flow analysis. I think it is important to model out your future assumptions for the company. But a lot of people view discounted cash flow analysis as the law, and it determines whether or not you should buy a company and exactly what price you should buy it. And I don't really view it that way. I think it is important to do it as somewhat of a sanity check, to plug in your assumptions and make sure that they make sense in regards to what you're paying for a company. But having said that, there are other major considerations that need to be made when buying a company. The moat of the company, the leadership, the secular growth, the products and services that it sells, the switching costs, right? The qualitative aspects of a business that you're buying are paramount. They're incredibly important. So while I use modeling and discounted cash flow analysis as one tool in a tool belt, that's the way that I view it. One tool to help aid in your overall research process. And I'm doing it for every company. I'm trying to value every company to reasonable expectations, but I also want to own the absolute best companies. I want to own the best companies at a fair or reasonable price, or better yet, undervalued. That's what I'm trying to do with this portfolio. So Salesforce is one of the companies I outline. It's one of the best stocks, one of the best companies in the market. And my valuation of it shows right now that it's reasonably valued. It's not heavily undervalued. It's not an absolute steal, but it is reasonably valued. So that's my thoughts on it. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you want to check out more exclusive content, get access to a Discord community, or you want access to Qualtrm, we are about to push another major update that has a lot of changes. You can join the Patreon. It comes with a free trial. There's no bait and switch. There's no upselling. There's no ads. Your price never changes. It's easy to join and cancel. I think you'll really enjoy it. So check that out. There's a link in the description for the Patreon. Other than that, I'll see you in the next one.